Men and women spend a third of their lives working. Today, we take a look at our current approach to the work environment and how re-feminizing the workplace may empower us all, inside the bedroom and out. Today, we're talking with Lisa Marie Jenkins, author of Wake Up Beauty, It's Not About the Prince, about re-feminizing the workplace.
You're listening to TNA Talk Sex, where we push your boundaries. I'm T.
And I'm A. Okay, so we're working on a new name.
Yes. Okay. So turning our name over from Pushing Boundaries with TNA to TNA Talk Sex. Has a little bit to do with SEO and a little bit to do with searchability. So, and also, yeah, like we're passionate about sexuality and balancing that with a fuller human experience. So thank you, listeners, for joining us on that, that marketing shift.
So, okay. So I'm super excited to bring on Lisa. She'll be joining us in a second.
Yeah.
I found her by, I was listening to a different podcast and he was grilling her and I loved everything that she was saying. And I'm like, oh my God, we have to talk to this woman.
Yeah. Grilling her about the male female dynamic and kind of all the miscommunication that's happening right now around creating gender equality.
I know, and it's such a hot topic right now, but I feel like this conversation that you're about to embark on it's really honing into the core, I think, of male-female approach to the work environment. And this totally relates to our sexuality. How can you, I mean, we're at work all the time.
Right, a third of your life. And also, I think it speaks to, well, frankly, female sexuality and their comfort with it, and all of it kind of just folds into your identity and what's going to give you a fuller experience sexually. I mean
one thing that I talk about, it's a passionate thing of mine, is this whole notion, which is why I'm like, when Lulise is like using this term, refeminizing the world, I'm like, yes, because I feel like we have become stronger as women, and that's great, but I do feel like there perhaps we need to be careful about how we're going about it. And I totally feel my own experience has been being strong and independent. I've been a business owner my entire, this is crazy to even think about. I've never worked for anyone else outside of high school. I've only ever worked for myself.
I've worked for other people, but not as much. Yeah,
but I will say, like, but being put into that role and like trying to maneuver my way through being a business owner as a, like, on my own as a woman, there has been a lot of like, not issues, but it has been a learning curve of being too strong or being this, and, you know, trying to do it like a man when I'm younger and I don't really know what I'm doing.
And
it does affect my sexuality. It totally does. Like, I'm not able to be more vulnerable in the bedroom, or
you end up all up in your head.
Right.
I have to say, I think more women will orgasm more frequently, faster. They'll have less problems the more we re-feminize.
I totally agree.
The workplace.
Okay. So yeah. Oh, and should I share the story?
Yeah.
Okay. So this woman, my sort of second mother told me this story about her experience. My mom died in 2004. And so she's like a mom. And so she is in the media, and she was one of the first news anchors to go to be reporting on sports. So it's a total, I mean, male, that is a male dominated
still is
market. It is. But so she was one of the trailblazing women in this. And she told me this story about being, you know, the whole thing about feminism at that time, this must have been in the 70s, mm-hmm. Was like, oh, women will have made it once they get into the locker room. So now here's like the first show where they wanted to send her into the locker room to get these interviews from all these football players. And she was like, I don't want to go into the locker room. That's disgusting in there. It's like full of naked. I mean, for me, I'm like, this sounds great, but full of naked, sweaty, you know, big guys. And she's, you know, a short little woman. And she's like, I have no desire to go into that locker room. But, you know, here's this group of male news anchors who are like, you know, pushing their way and fighting. And it's really aggressive. And everyone that's like dog eat dog, trying to get the best interview. She's like, F this. I'm not doing it. I'm just not doing it. So she went around and she had made friends with the coach earlier, like throughout her time working there. And so she had developed relationships, and she went around the back to the back door and waited patiently after for all those, you know, all the dog eat dog men to get out, you know, to get their interviews
kind
and
of
be done.
Barking at them and so, for yeah, right. sound bites.
And so finally at the end, you know, the star athlete that everyone was trying to get came out. He knew that she was waiting there. Came out and gave her this super solid one-on-one interview. He was totally, he was on his own. He wasn't, you know, surrounded by this mass of, you know, aggressive energy and whatnot. So he quieted down. He was appreciative of the solitude and the one-on-one attention and totally opened up and gave her the most amazing interview. And so, and whatever, her rating soared. And
so for you, it's the prime example of a feminine
approach.
It
is. Well, it is. And that's what she and I were having this conversation and it was like for like 3 hours about, you know, yeah. the feminine way of working. And it really is. She's like, I put my foot down. I wasn't going to sacrifice what made me feel powerful as a, you know, I didn't want to have to bend to the way the men were doing things, which didn't feel right. I wanted to be my authentic woman, feminine self and do it my way. And it worked. It not only worked, but she became known for getting
intimate
that style,
interviews.
Intimate interviews with these, you know, super, you know, manly athletes. So that's one example where I'm like, there you go. Like, well, we can be more effective, maybe.
Right. So that anyway. led us to wanting to talk with Lisa.
Lisa.
Because she wrote this great book that really hits on all of these issues that I'm frankly have been rattling around in my own head. I mean, I worked at an architecture, two architecture firms and kind of, you know, different places where those are male dominated communities as well. And I always felt like I definitely brought more feminine into the space, but
yeah. But how could you not, Tina?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just super feminine and love to wear feminine clothes. And
she flits about the world in a beautiful way.
Thanks.
So let's introduce Lisa. Lisa, hi.
Hi.
Let me tell everybody a little bit about you, because thank you for being with us. We're
yeah,
super excited.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to be here.
Yay! So Lisa, your book came out earlier this year, Wake Up Beauty, It's Not About the Prince. You can find her book everywhere. You can also check out her website, lisamariejenkins.com, and you can find her on Twitter at lisajenkins920. And Lisa, God, you've had like 20 plus years at Fortune 500 high-tech companies and in management, like sales and marketing positions. You're a consultant and a speaker and executive coach specializing in feminine leadership. And you've given talks and workshops at like Xerox and Google. So she's totally immersed in this world.
Google officializes everything.
I know, right?
Right.
I was like, Google, done.
Yeah,
sealed.
They found her worthy. Yes.
And you're also a regular contributor to Huffington Post, which I love. So you're the woman to talk to.
Thank you.
If anyone's going to help us.
I love the story, by the way, of your friend and the female sports news reporter. And you know what, as you were telling the story, what clicked for me is because she chose to use emotional intelligence and to connect human being to human being instead of getting all caught up on that typical male testosterone, competitive, out to win, you know, pursuance of getting the interview, right? Or getting the take on the game or whatever. Right. So that's what, I mean, that's what it really, when I say rehumanize, refeminize, they're the same to me.
Right.
It means being emotional intelligence back in. And you hear the terms B2B, B2C, meaning B to business, business to business, business to customer. But I say, forget all of that, like go H to A. It's about human to human connection, because that's why she succeeded in that interview, is because it was about connecting to another human being, right? And getting to the real story instead of that frenzy male kind of aggressive testosterone, I'm competitive out to win thing.
Right.
So it's a cool story.
It is a cool, yeah. I thought so too. That's why we launched this huge long discussion over morning coffee. So when you mentioned that, one thing that comes to mind, and I want to clear this off the deck for all of our male listeners right now, this is not about male bashing. This is not about bashing the masculine approach, as you're just talking about, you know, the aggressive male way of doing things. There's a time and a place for everything.
Well, and also I think it's not, it doesn't mean you're a man, therefore you're doing it wrong. It's like men and women have a feminine and masculine energy that I think, Lisa, yes, you talk a lot about.
Yes, and that's the big piece. So when I look at, if you go back to the 1950s, men, okay, so we all have a feminine and a masculine side, whether you call it the yin and the yang, whether you call it the right brain, left brain, but it's about, we're all responsible as individuals to create more balance as a masculine, feminine aspects of us. And that has nothing to do with sexual orientation, and it has nothing to do with how you dress, right? Whether you dress feminine or not. There's certainly women that are very feminine dressers and are very masculine women in how they conduct themselves in the world. And they are, you know, heterosexual. So it's not about that. But primarily, if you look at the 1950s, I'll go all the way back there, and it goes back all the way to caveman days, men primarily resided in their masculine or the left side of their brain. And that is the aggressive, the analytical, the decisive, the resilient. It's the very linear, competitive kind of place, and not very tuned into their right brain, which is more of the creative, the intuitive, the passionate, the empathetic, spiritual, whatever you want to call it, the creative, the artistic part. And when you looked at even relationships up to the 50s, men were protector and providers, and women were the nurturers and the selfless and the empathetic and compassionate, right? So they played very specific roles. But what's happened, you know, the 1970s moved women into the, you know, the angry bar, you know, bra burning stage, which was kind of needed to get the ball rolling. But that's not what feminism is about anymore, right? There's, I like to call it the feminista, because saying you're a feminist is almost has a negative connotation, because it means you're angry and you're in opposition to men.
I totally agree.
That's not what it's about. But what's happened is women have really started upping their, you know, since 1985, the year I graduated college marked the year that women started earning 50% of all degrees. And now women earn 60 to 65% of degrees, both bachelor and graduate degrees. And we've been in the workforce full force now since the mid 80s. And so women have upped their masculine. They're more educated, they're more assertive, they're more analytical, they're more decisive. But men haven't upped their feminine game, right? They haven't moved to the place of being more collaborative, loyal, flexible, intuitive, passionate, compassionate, right? So what's happened is, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've had men say to me, like, Lisa, I can't even imagine dating you. Like, you don't need me. And I'm like, why do I need you? Like, I want you as a playmate, as a sexual partner, as, you know,
companionship,
companion,
enjoying conversation.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't want to need you, right? That puts me in a vulnerable space. But so men don't know who they are when they're not in a role of provider, protector. And that's what you guys picked up on that podcast, is that that's very threatening to men. Just like a guy saying to me, I wouldn't even know how to date you. Like, you won't, quote, need me. It's like, okay, that's got, so what's about is women are coming into balance in their masculine and feminine qualities. And it still means that they have a role as a woman versus a man, but men are still lagging behind. So I think that's what it's about. So when I say re-feminize the world, and I worked in very male-dominated industry, and where usually I was one woman to every 20 guys in any meeting or conference that you went to. And what I noticed is that there was a lot of lack of passion and purpose and real connection. And it was just all about winning for the sake of winning and from a competitive place. And I saw like how much we needed to bring that human element back in. But I saw women capable, but they thought, I got to do it a man's way. I got to be totally masculine to succeed. And that's where I think women have to be more vulnerable and more strong so they can bring their true feminine strengths into the workplace and not think they have to do it like a man, right? Because I don't want to see a woman dressed in drag, or a man dressed in drag seeming like a woman leader. And you see a lot of that.
Right.
Yeah. I was going to say something that I think I struggled with, and a fear I have, is that for women, we've been taught to kind of push into the masculine, and then we've had to.
Right. I mean, that was part of the journey, but it's no longer.
Yeah. Right. But in a way that we're neglecting the feminine, and maybe there's fear of voicing it, like you're saying, in the workplace. So as a woman, you can end up with blinders on because you're not living in your fullest capability.
Yeah, because there's this whole, there's a double-edged sword going on for women right now in that you can't be seen as nice and competent. Like if you're too nice, then you're not seen as competent. And if you're too competent and assertive and decisive, then you're not seen as nice. And so it's like we're in this unconscious gender bias thing of women are redefining our roles and people are still trying to stereotype them. And I think a great explanation, and this just blew me away the first time I saw it. So there was a woman, she was a Google executive. Her name is Heidi Roizen. And she left, not Google, I'm sorry, Apple. She left Apple and she started her own venture capital firm in Silicon Valley. And she was so wildly successful that Harvard did a business case study on her. And then these two professors at Columbia University took this Harvard business case and they divided their students into half. And so one half, and there were men and women in both groups equally, by the way. So they gave one group the original case study with Heidi Roizen, and they gave the other group the exact same case study, and they changed one word. They changed Heidi to Howard, didn't change another word in the document. And then they polled them separately. And what came back is they found them equally competent. And to me, that's like, duh, how could you not? They had the same credentials, the same level of success. But they loved Howard. Howard was a great guy. Totally trust Howard. Would love to work for him. He's a real leader. Heidi, don't like her. Wouldn't trust her. She's out for herself. Certainly wouldn't want to work for her. So why is it that when we see two completely same situations, but when it's a female, we judge her so harshly for being powerful and successful? I mean, that blows me away.
It does.
I mean,
me too.
I don't know.
You don't know what? Really?
No, I'm saying I know that that's what happens, but it's like, why is that? Yeah. You know, I mean, it has to just be because women were never in the workplace. It's programming.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just programming. But like, this is why we talk about this on the show. Is like, we so need to be aware because that kind of programming is running in the background of our lives constantly.
And it's like low level noise for a woman the minute she steps into an office with her first her first day of work.
But we do that. Absolutely. We judge ourselves that way too.
I know.
I mean,
that's what I mean. The critical buzz in the back of your head going, well, don't do this, don't do that. You'll be perceived like this.
So Lisa, how do we counteract that?
I call it unconscious gender bias, right? It's they're stereotypes, it's judgment, they're old outdated stereotypes is what it is. And we just, unless we become conscious of it, we'll just default to women are nice and supportive and emotional and men are driven and leaders, right? Like, it's like, we got to stop the stereotypes that women only, you know, fall into this one. So it's becoming consciously aware, like noticing it, calling it out when you see it. It can be like, I speak at a lot of conferences that aren't, I've spoken at a lot of tech conferences, and I can tell you right now, you rarely will see in the speaker lineup, there might be 20 speakers and you're lucky if there's one woman in there, right? And so it's calling it out when you notice it. But if you look at where in the US, I mean, women only represent 4.7% of Fortune 500 CEOs. And in major tech companies, women only represent 20% of employees, and that's across the board in all roles. And so female heads of state for around the world, women have only represented 6% of the countries worldwide. So if men are still primarily the decision makers, we got to start educating them that this exists and to start calling yourself out on it and noticing, are you judging her differently? Even if I've heard many men be very pro women in the workplace, but they have this unconscious gender bias going on that they don't even realize that they're judging her differently than they're judging the male counterpart.
May I question? This is coming to mind as we're talking, but I wonder if, and this gets a little bit esoteric perhaps.
What do you want to say?
What I want to say is I wonder if there would be more, if men would react differently, and if then those numbers would change and increase if women were actually going about this in a more feminine way instead of trying to continue to breach this world through the masculine way. I wonder if I'm envisioning a woman who's like fully in her power, in her feminine power, also not neglecting her masculine side as well, but like a balanced, wholesome, full, empowered feminine woman. I feel like men would automatically, that's been my experience anyway, in my business world, there's this magical thing that happens when I'm fully in that zone.
Yes, and, exactly, because that's when you're the most powerful.
Right, and I feel like these issues would just disintegrate.
Well, can I ask, are there examples of women that you see doing it? I mean, I know you spoke at Xerox. The CEO there is a woman, the Yahoo CEO. I mean, these kinds of things.
Yeah, are you still seeing masculine style feminine leaders?
Does I'm seeing a lot of them still.
Yeah.
I'm seeing it shift, and I'm starting to see more men come into balance with their feminine, I'm seeing more men that are they have humility, they're willing to be vulnerable, they're willing to not play the game, you know, of just putting on the mask and being tough and, you know, no kinks in the armor, don't show any weakness. I'm starting to see more men step into that, but I think so what I see in most women where they struggle is they're not decisive and they're afraid of failure. So they're not resilient when they screw up, and women struggle with, there's a big barrier still in gender communication for the most part. And I think this is why I did so well in male dominated industry, because I'm a really direct to the point communicator, but men tend to just get to the net, and they'll give you a very direct to the point communication. Mm-hmm. And then if there's more supporting details needed or required or asked for, they'll give it. Women do the exact opposite. They give you all the details. They give all you the support. They go round and round and round in circles before they finally get to the point. And that really hurts women in the workplace, because that's something that is a negative on the feminine side, right? We use too many words to communicate, and it's almost, I call it tentative speech. It's almost as if we feel we have to justify what we're going to say before we say it or apologize for our
case
existence.
In point. I just did it. Like, I do it all the time.
Held
even
your
on
tongue
the show.
A little.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, I do. I totally.
Yeah.
Sorry. Is there more? Keep going. You can keep.
Yeah, Lisa.
I interrupted you. I'm sorry. I just wanted to show you that there's an example that just happened.
But, you know, one of the things that happened for me and that led to my book is that I was really successful in corporate, and I saw a lot of successful women, and I saw women do one of two things. Either they felt like they had to lead like a man and do it the old, very traditional masculine way, or they just backed off and they played small instead of sharing what they could have really contributed and their own skills and their own magic and their own talents, because they were afraid they had to do it a man way or they couldn't do it at all, kind of thing. And that's what I'm starting to see shift a little bit. And I'll give you an example of where it would show up for me in the workplace. Is my last full-time role at Cisco, I was in the engineering organization and I was in a business unit for cloud, and it was a startup unit. Now, I am not an engineer. I was a phys ed major in college,
wow.
Right? So I'm more of a biz
dude.
So everybody in my team was an engineer, and some of them very highly qualified engineers, right? Went to Harvard, went to MIT, went to Berkeley. So a lot of intellectual capital in that room that can be really – and I'm not that – I'm smart. Like, I'm bright, and I'm very intuitive with people, and I have a lot of emotional intelligence, but I don't have – that kind of left brain intellect. It's just not how I'm built. But there would be times we would be having meetings and discussing ideas and next steps and strategy. And I would come up with ideas that they were an intuitive gut feel. And I knew that I could be kind of laughed at, or they would think I was silly, or they'd ask me for where's the data behind that idea or whatever. And so what would happen is this fear would come up, like, oh my God, I can't say that. I can't speak that. And I'd get this knot in my throat and I'd feel all fleshed around my throat and my face. And what I learned was when I felt that was my trigger, my compass to say it needs to be said. It needs to be put out there. It needs to be said differently. It needs to be. And sometimes it was met pretty openly, and sometimes it was met like they looked at me like I had three heads, right? But the point is that we all have to get to a place where we can allow that vulnerability, because that's what allows true creativity and caring about the greater good and making positive impact. And that the bottom line can no longer just be about winning and profit. The bottom line has to include, how are we impacting the world in a positive way, and how are we caring about the greater good, and how are we contributing to our society, and that it's about the people. So to answer your question, and it's funny that you brought up Xerox, because if you look at CEOs of Fortune 500, there's women represent 4.7%, and Xerox is now on their second female CEO. And the first one, Anne Mulcahy, and I just saw her. She's retired now, and she sits on boards. But they did a fireside chat with her at the Xerox conference I was just at 2 weeks ago in Dallas. And she's a true feminine leader. She's one of those. She just has balance, and she. The bottom line is she cares about people, and she cares about doing the right thing, and has integrity. And it was so cool to see that a heart-driven leader from a feminine yet very brilliant woman at the same time. And the person that's now, her name is Ursula Burns. She's an engineer, and she's completely left-brain, and she's completely masculine. And I don't see those feminine leadership qualities in her at all yet. She's not only a woman CEO of less than 5%, she's also the first Black American woman to be a Fortune 500 CEO. So, but she did it the man way, which is just really interesting to me.
I feel like we need new words, new vocabulary, because it's like, it's like, okay, well,
she's a woman, but
you're a woman, but like, are you doing it with these qualities or those qualities? Like, that's what I want to know.
And that's why I think we almost need to take out that it's about men and women. It's about what's being called for is we need authentic, and that can be a really overused word and right today, but authentic means that you're living the truth of who you are, and you're speaking your truth, and you're willing to be vulnerable, and but it's about, we need leaders that show humility, that don't take this place of hierarchy, and lead from their heart because they really care about positive impact and they care about people, right? And that's whether you're a male or female, it doesn't matter. It's I want to see that from any leader. But I think that women are more, I mean, we're a little ahead of the game on emotional intelligence, right? And that's for a couple reasons. A, we've been allowed to process our feelings and emotions. Right. Up until my son's generation, and he's 21, boys were taught to stuff their emotions and not that it was weakness and don't show vulnerability and all of those things. So they're behind us because they didn't get a chance to learn emotional intelligence because they were stifled, which is very sad. But there's also another piece, and it's genetic, in that in the right and left brain, and you can call that the yin and the yang, you can call it masculine and feminine. But it's only connected by one channel called the corpus callosum in the brain. And in a woman, biologically, that is a much wider, larger channel between left brain and right brain activity. And so that's why if you went to a counseling session with your husband, like a marriage therapy or a counseling therapy or whatever, that a woman is processing real time as we're getting into this heavy, deep emotional stuff and feelings, and a man will need to go home into his cave for a couple days to fully process everything that transpired in that hour session. Mm-hmm. It's because he literally kind of has a bandwidth issue in moving between left and right brain activity. So that's why it's so comfortable for them to stay in left brain.
I feel like but in a relationship, I would get frustrated, but really he just needed like a day to process what I would say. And I'd think, why aren't you receiving my message now?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right.
The next day he would.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of, you got to have to cut him some slack. But I think as more women, so women need to step up their masculine game, in my opinion, being more decisive, being bigger risk takers, being more direct in their communications.
Can I ask you in your Cisco story, you just mentioned you just mentioned like speaking up and having that trigger moment whenever you'd feel like you were being stifled, then making a point to step up and say it.
Yeah.
If there was a moment where you said something where you felt like you had three heads, the reality of it was, I guess I'm curious, when you spoke up, even if the message wasn't received, you didn't feel like you failed overall. I mean, it shouldn't silence you permanently. It's like, that one wasn't taken.
No. And I think that was, that was a little bit of, that was something I learned over time well, right? I kind of learned to refine. I learned not to take it personally, and it's like any idea, right? It can be shot down. But I think for me, it was learning not to be stifled by fear. That fear usually means that's what the direction you need to go. Whatever you're afraid of or fearing or afraid to speak up. And like we can totally get into why are women so afraid to speak? Right? Speak their truth and stand up for themselves and have boundaries. And, think about history for women. I mean, women have been, they've been mutilized.
Have you seen Suffragette?
Burned at the stake, enslaved, put in sex traffickings, no legal rights. I mean, it hasn't been 100 years yet that we've had the right to vote in today's election day, right? It's been 95 years since women gained the right to vote in our own country. So of course it's scary for women to speak up. We carry that in our lineage. We carry it in cellular memory. We carry it from, conditioning from our mothers, our grandmothers, because when a woman spoke up, it could literally mean death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We forget that. I mean, I think about my own mother, the university she went to Columbia University for grad school. I think maybe 2 years after they started admitting women to that university.
Wow.
You know, I mean, they didn't let women in until 1980 or 83,
exactly.
Something like this. And then I attended the same school years later, but like it
took time. Yeah.
Yeah. Only that one. Anyway, that one generation.
Yeah, that's a trailblazer for sure.
We're taking a break.
Okay, yes, we're going to take a mini break.
But when we come back, I want to bring in the masculine again. I have some sort of devil's advocate questions.
Naughty.
About masculine approach and that the effectiveness of that versus the effectiveness of the feminine approach.
All right, you can tweet us at TA Talk Sex. Instagram TA Talk Sex as well, and write us a review on iTunes, because that's the best way to get this great information to other people.
And check out Lisa's work at lisamariejenkins.com and her book Wake Up Beauty. It's not about the prince.
You're listening to TNA Talk Sex, pushing your boundaries. I'm T.
And I'm A. Welcome back. We're talking with Lisa Marie Jenkins. She's the author of the book Wake Up Beauty. It's not about the prince.
Can I say I love the title, because I feel like I struggled with this. Like, I had a long relationship where a great man, incredibly smart, by the way, very left-brained. well, both, actually. I mean, he had incredible creative capacity, but anyway, was working in the left brain, so it dominated. But I found myself silenced in the relationship, and moving on, I've been able to find my strength. And I've also been reading more and learning about these kinds of things. Like you're saying, Lisa, even stepping into more leadership roles in producing projects, this kind of thing, and seeing where I hold my tongue, seeing where I, And then my fears of falling into a relationship where I basically become the sleeping beauty and a bit mute in a dynamic because it's easier to lean on him or something.
Yes. And that's like the whole purpose. The title is about, it's like Sleeping Beauty did not wake up when Prince Charming kissed her. That is the biggest fattest lie we've ever been told as little girls. Sleeping Beauty, when Prince Charming kissed her, she went to sleep on herself and her own passion and purpose and worth, because she believed romantic love was meant to provide that to her. So that's really where the title comes from. It's that we look for something outside of ourselves as opposed to taking responsibility for our own passion, purpose, and worth. And that never comes from anything outside of us, especially romantic love. And men fall in that category as well. And that's one of the things I started seeing in corporate America with really powerful women. And I'll never the first time, it was a VP that I knew at a large company. And she was a little petite, very attractive young woman. And she was a powerhouse, like super smart, just, balls to the wall, go get her, took no shit from anybody. And then I saw her with her fiance in a networking business social situation. And I could not believe the disrespect in how he spoke to her. Right? And I was like, wow, like there's a dichotomy right there. Like, she was powerful at work. And in the romantic relationship, she was powerless. And I'm like raising my hand. I'm like, oh my God, that's so me. And so I started noticing more and more women that were owning their game in the workplace, but still didn't have any self-esteem in the romantic relationship. They felt like they had to keep it or maintain it to stay whole, or they wouldn't be good enough if they didn't have a man. And so they would give up their own boundaries or their own worth in order to maintain it, because they knew if they didn't, they'd rock the apple cart, right? And it'd be over.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
There's like so many things running through my mind. Okay.
You were going to be devil's advocate.
Okay. So here's.
Did you have a little moment you wanted to share about being silenced?
No. Well, okay. I mean, sure. How many?
No. I mean, we can all raise our hands. And that people would say to me, I think you're a strong woman when they meet me. Like I have presence, right? But I was silenced. I mean, I did it too.
Myself,
I should say, I did it to myself.
Yeah, yes. Okay, so here's the thing. Yeah. Let me, it's coming down to, I have this thing, and it's like, I get feminine, and I know this isn't, we're not going to really use that word feminism here, because we all have agreed that we don't really like it.
I like it. Actually, I personally
will use it.
I use it because I want to redefine it, like wash it of its stigma. Anyway, go ahead.
I know, it's just, yeah. Well, okay, so I get the whole thing, and but I still feel like some of the things we're talking about is still a little aggressive, is that the word I want to use, in terms of our dynamic, like as we're talking about relationships and being empowered and how that affects our relationships. And the podcast that you did, it's Reinvention Radio, it's Steve Olscher, he also goes by Mr. Bold. It was a really fascinating show. I mean, go and watch it. But I will. It was really. I mean, I have to be grateful.
No, I know exactly. Like, yeah. He said to me, he goes, "So, Lisa, let me ask you a question." He goes, "Are you single?" And I said,
"Oh,
yes."
No, I could have killed him.
He goes, "No surprise there." And so that's the whole thing, right? Like,
but I have to. Yeah, it is. But I want to say this though, that it's. I kind of see what he's saying. What he said was,
"I know."
What he said was,
"Are you kidding?"
He said, "He's like, okay. I mean, do men want women to be successful? Like, we want a woman who's a woman." And I'm like, Steve, I'm like, you're not understanding what she's saying. That's what she's saying. Like, we all want women to be women. But like when we were talking, so I don't have this all figured out, so this will probably be jumbled. But when we're talking about, like we were talking about providing, like, and he had mentioned that too. He's like, we want to be needed. Yes. We want to provide. And I feel like I've been going through this thing in my own personal life in the last 6 months where I'm exploring this too. I'm a very strong and independent woman. I have been. I feel like I've come from a place of being this programming of being too strong. And so it's been this process and evolution of rediscovering this feminine, softer power. And as I'm playing with this in my relationship dynamics, I feel like one thing that's been illuminated is being in relation, I don't know, how do I say this? There's a way to be strong and independent and yet mm-hmm. still be provided for and need and rely on your man. Like,
yes.
Like, he'll put food on my plate. He'll open my door. He'll, like, all these soft things that I think women have shunned and, like, oh, I don't need that.
They're
blah,
almost
blah,
superficial
blah.
Blocks rather but than it, real but, in, internal changes.
Right.
Yes, because men still, I mean, from a DNA level still, they need to feel, they need to feel like they can fluff up, pump up their chest feathers, right? Like, you need me.
But I have to say, as a woman, I am also really enjoying that, and it's not weakening me. It's not like I'm weakened in any way.
How are you allowing it? I'm really curious. So how do you? Because it's so timely. Because I've been actually talking to a relationship coach, and she's all about this women. Yeah. So go ahead.
Yeah, and this is all still like in experimental mode. So I'll write a blog when I come to a full epiphany on it. But at the moment, it's in a way that it is more superficial. Like I said, like small things, but they really have an impact. Like allowing him to put food on my plate, opening the door. I once
had a suitcase so heavy that I couldn't lift it, and I let big men help me with it.
Yeah. Stuff like that. But also,
and they love it, right?
They
feel great when they get to help.
Well, but
and
yeah,
you
hold
praising
on. Don't sidetrack.
Fine. I'm just, you're right. I was making a little joke. But,
okay, so hold on
but
a
it's
second.
True.
So,
but, I praise them. But, and they're happy.
And that's great. But more than that, it's also, and maybe here's the thing. It's a man that I can actually rely on. Like, he's actually intelligent in emotionally and in many, he's also older. I don't know if that helps. I think
a man who I was dating someone a few years younger And I mean, you know, so he's in his 20s. He's so supportive. But what I'm saying is, actually, I think you're getting to like a confidant, someone that you can have an emotional support with, someone that you can turn to.
I feel like that, like in my past, it's been more of needing someone, honestly, subconsciously needing them for validation from my male partner, which I think is like the weaker feminine thing. And that we can get trapped into, versus now it's like he empowers me all the way. He's all like, go live your dreams, go do this, blah, blah, blah. And actually this dynamic we have where I feel more submissive. I feel like I'll even defer, and you guys might hate me for this, but when it comes to making plans or something, I don't even care. I'm like, I trust that everything he chooses is going to be so fun and fantastic. I'm like, I don't even, you go ahead and dominate that plan. You make it. Like, and I feel like that's a very male thing, allowing him to step in and do that. And I'm enjoying being the submissive. Oh, great. Go create a wonderful experience for me. And I feel taken care of. I feel like a queen. I feel very respected, and I feel soft still.
Yes.
Can I say
you just hit it. Like, I haven't learned that skill. I will just be honest. Like, that's something I'm actively working on. But I think that's as we come into balance and we start own, you know, we don't need someone to kill the saber-toothed tiger or bring, you know, literally let go and catch our food. But the point is we have to play that role that allows us to, Southern women have figured this out a long time ago, by the way, but the Georgia Peach, there's a lot of truth in that she plays that submissive, but really she's always in charge and always in power, but she plays it so he always feels like he is.
Yes, but I wonder if that was done with manipulation though.
Right. Yes. No, I don't think Lisa's saying it's the best way to go.
If you don't look at it from the right perspective, it could seem manipulative for sure. But so this, what you're talking about is exactly what this relationship coach is talking about. And I'll give her a plug. Her name is Karen Card, C-A-R-D. But she gave this story, and I thought it was fabulous because it's exactly what you're talking about. She's like, so the beautiful princess was trapped in the tower by a fire-breathing dragon. And her father, the king, put out to all the land, the knight that can come and slay the dragon and save her can have her as his wife. So of course a big, strong, handsome knight came, and he was all excited to slay the dragon because she was very beautiful and he wanted to marry her. So he took his sword out and he's getting ready to slay the dragon, and the princess yells from the top, wait, don't do it with your sword. That will create a bloody mess. Go get a noose and then come back and strangle him. And so the prince leaves and he goes and he gets his noose, right? And he comes back and he's lassos it up and he's ready to swing it and put it in the air. And she's like, no, don't do that. I decided it would be better if we just poison him. So I'll just come down and I'll put some poison in the food,
my God.
And then we'll kill him together.
I hate her. I'm
like, so I'm like, oh my God, that's me. That is just so
like, I had a big moment.
Wait. Is that the end of the story? Hold on.
Lisa,
are you there?
Yeah.
Did we cut you off?
Was there more?
So basically, if you think about that, I mean, how is the prince feeling at that point?
Totally emasculated and like shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing, is that we don't, you know, we're so busy trying to just stand our ground and own our power that we can emasculate in the process. And that's the softness, the submissiveness that you just mentioned that we have to cultivate as well.
Well, I think it's just what you said, is trying to control the, like, micromanage, basically. I mean, you know, being too hands-on rather than trusting that the other person's strong as well. Like, if we take it out of gender for a moment, I feel like that's at the core of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is this oxymoron. And this is why I'm like, I don't feel super, like, it still is an exploration. There's a lot of questions in my mind, but there, it's like there's a time and there's a place, or there's like, I don't know, you know. But I'm glad we're talking about this, because I want all the guys listening, like, it and Mr. Bull too. It's not about,
well,
it's,
you know what, it's in, like I talked about on that podcast, it's about diversity to me. And if you just look at, we've lived in a very masculine driven world, from politics to business, it's all been very masculine driven, very male driven as well. And what happens is that it's the diversity in our thoughts, in our creativity, and our skill sets that really allow true success and shifts and major changes to happen. So if we keep trying to, you know, it's what's that famous quote by Einstein, if you can't solve the same problem with the same thinking that created the problem, mm-hmm. well, that's what we're doing when we just keep doing the same round and round, pure masculine driven way. And so I want females to bring more of a diversity, right? They bring that compassion, that empathy, that intuition, and we still need the masculine. Absolutely. Oh, for sure, we need, but it's about balance. So if you look at, you have a mixture of skill sets and you have a mixture of masculine and feminine in the room, I mean, of course there's going to be more success. And the beauty of that is there are a half a dozen studies out now from C-level execs to boards that companies that employ more women in C-level roles and on their boards will outperform their competitors on almost every measure of profitability. And that's not because women are better or smarter. It's because they're creating that diversity in their leadership.
I think that's such an important thing to emphasize.
Okay, so, well, I guess which brings up my whole, well, Steve Ulscher also had another concern. He'd said, well, and this is, again, grateful that he's bringing up the typical.
I never got past the one after he said, well, no surprise there that you're single.
Oh, well, you were just like too red.
At that point, I was like, oh, shit, what am I going to do now?
Right,
I know, I was like, ah,
but wait, speaking of that, I know, I'll let you, I just want to note that that is a way of silencing someone, right? I mean, it's such an aggressive shame trigger, like that's the goal, and people don't realize it, but those little quick comments can be so digging. But go ahead,
but he's, you know, let's understand that he's coming from a threatened place, so let's address it. And one of the things he said was, you know, look, for my organization, I want to make sure that we're going to win. I want to make sure that we're going to be effective, and I want to make sure that we're being led to success. And so
driven.
Right. And he's like, and for me, I feel like I need a man. I need someone who's going to fight for me and who's going to fight and win and be willing to do that. And I guess the assumption there is that women are not going to fight, that it's going to be this softer, more, well, let's talk about it. And it's like there's
a little bit of an Obama approach.
And I kind of see what he's saying. Like, I see what he's saying. Like, if you're envisioning the far, far, far spectrum of a feminine approach, you're right. Like, having that 100% is not going to breed success, I don't think. There does need to be the balance. But yes. I think that's what his concern is. Like, assuming, and maybe this is a mass concern, that the feminine is too weak. It's not a fighting quality, feminine.
No, and so. That's where, you know, this might be a little woo-woo for you, but if you think about when you hear the term inspired action, right, it means in spirit. So if you think of if you take left and right brain, the right brain is the inspiration, the ideas, the creativity, and then the left brain is really the slave to carry out the action, to be decisive, to go into action, to be resilient if you fail and get up and do it again. But if you're taking action purely from the left brain as your master, right, it's coming purely from a win competitive place, and it's not coming from the right brain of inspired action, right? So, and I think that's the mix up there, is you have to have both right. to be truly successful.
Well said.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was I going to say? Oh my God, I totally just lost my train of thought. It was about, I had a stint in the sex industry, and my clients, I feel like this is important because, it was a healing role that I was taking. So as I'm listening to these men, you know, I was very curious about their home situations. And so I did a lot. I interviewed them a lot, actually. And I saw these two things happening. One was there's a group of men who have women who are in the work world, and they're very successful. And these men feel like they are on the bottom of the list, and they're often talked down to. They're not respected. There's no time for them. But there's just this lack of honor, I guess, and they felt weakened. And so they would reach out beyond their marriage for intimacy. And then there's this second group of men where the women were had no other interests outside of the family, and all their conversations revolved around kids. And the woman, like, it's like, oh, hey, let's go away for the weekend. What do you want to do? I don't know, honey. You know, I don't care, whatever. And so they would describe that, and that there was no right. And so there was a lack of inspiration, and there was boredom, and that they just saw her as a roommate kind of, or someone like, so I guess it's interesting. You know, I feel like we're talking about this in regards to sexuality, because I do feel like the balance and the power that we as women hold and how we use it in our lives professionally for what we're doing really does affect our home life. Like, I saw this in these guys and I'm like, oh my God, how do I not be either of these groups of women?
Right. Like in the bedroom and out. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, there's also responsibility there on both sides of what that union is really about. And I kind of just lost my train of thought, but let's just be frank. I mean, men, if they don't consciously outthink their DNA, they are primitively driven to procreate and continue our species, mm-hmm. right? So I was engaged to a Special Forces Black Hawk pilot in my 40s. We were together for 3 years, and he had a great balance. So here's this tough guy, you know, like Special Forces pilot, but he also had this really, like, he loved to cook, he loved to decorate, he was very sensitive, like in our relationship. But he said to me one time, he's like, Lisa, he goes, every man out there, every woman that he sees throughout his day looks at her with one discernment. I would do her or I wouldn't do her. And so I think sometimes, you know, like men have to start consciously out. They have to start outgrowing that just DNA and get beyond that. They have to take some responsibility for it. And I think that women have to take some responsibility as well of what the union's really about. And I've heard both of those things so many times, but yeah. You know, the sex industry is dark and it's growing. And, you know, when you just look at, I mean, I've had my share of invites to the strip clubs. Tampa is famous for a strip club called Mons Venus. And I would be at conferences in Orlando. And I mean, it didn't matter where the guy was from. They had heard of Mons Venus, and a group mm-hmm. of guys would make a road trip from Orlando over to Tampa to check this place out. But I'll tell you also, my housekeeper was in the sex trafficking industry, and she was one of the girls that was bussed in those kind of places to work the pole and then work the back rooms. And she was not free. She was a victim, right? Yeah, So when men enter those kind of dark worlds, I mean, they bring that back to their family too, right? I mean, let's face it, men are physically driven to have sex, and women want romance and want to feel intimately connected in order to have sex. And so we both have to take some responsibility for cultivating a deeper relationship around sex, right?
We do. Yeah. No, we do. And I didn't bring this up to go into, because it's like a whole other topic, the sex industry. But yes, you're right.
Just the idea of, it comes back to balance. I mean, I'll say this, yes. I even struggle with the balance. Like I'm kind of, I would say I'm entering that phase where you really start focusing. And I think for men my age, they pilot into their careers and often don't have time for full relationships with a woman. And that's caused me like emotional pain. But then I'm also going, well, yeah, but I'm buckling down and also driving at my career. I think right now in the United States, there's a tough balance and kind of identifying what's our priorities.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And
it shows in the divorce rate, right?
Yeah. And I think that boils down to our cultural value of what's the word I'm looking for? Cultural value of like achieving.
Yeah, but, status.
Yes. So Lisa, yes. I wanted to ask you what we can do, what women and men alike, but let's start with women, what women can do to change the way they're approaching their work environment or what they're doing in life.
Well, what stands out to me is women step into that, you know, you mentioned it, just that full embodied, you're soft and submissive, but you're in your power. And that's balance, right? That's masculine and feminine power. You don't need to be aggressive to be in your power, right? You can be in a loving, kind, graceful place, right? Like I love the word grace, and I use that word a lot because, and not in a religious term, but if you think about a ballerina, right? She's probably the most graceful. She's so incredibly graceful, and she makes it look so effortless. But why is she so graceful? Because she is so incredibly powerful from her core out.
Exactly.
Right? And that's what it's about. So, but I think for women, this was a big thing for me in corporate America. And this is hard for me to admit out loud, but I think it has a point in that I purposely navigated my career so I would not report to a woman. And the reason is because I saw most women, it didn't mean by any, it's an absolute by any means, but I certainly saw for the majority, most women were going to either micromanage the shit out of me, or they were going to see me as a threat and they were going to keep me oppressed. And when I worked for men, men were fabulous in that, go do your thing, Lisa, just call me if you need me, you know, like they were hands off. And as long as I was performing, getting the job done, hitting my quota, whatever, they were fine with me. And I didn't see women managing the same way. Mm-hmm. And so I think we almost hurt each other. And that's a big thing for me. And there's a famous quote by Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State. And she said, there's a special place in hell for women that don't support other women.
Yeah.
So right. That's a big thing that women need to start seeing. It is in our unity. It's in our sisterhood. It's in supporting one another to get our courage game on that we all rise. And not coming from a fear scarcity model that we're in opposition or we're in competition with each other.
Right.
So that's a big thing. I think as women start coming into their own balance, that we free men up to start exploring the feminine side that they've been forced to neglect in their upbringings.
Yeah. Yes. So I just thought of martial arts when we were talking about that energy of being, you know, submissive or like, you know,
Aikido.
Not pushing. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Not pushing, but rather allowing that person's energy to come at you and yielding, and through yielding, able to take control.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Well,
and women live a lot by external approval, and we need to let go of that.
Yeah, that's true. Look, it's not an easy solution. It's a constant evolution. And you're right. We have, you know, thousands of years of this story of in our DNA. So it's,
well,
but it's up to us to be aware, and we can take small action.
Yeah.
Can I?
Well, hey, there's a reason we call it Mother Earth, right? We don't call it Father Earth. We call it Mother Earth. You know, and our Earth is not very happy right now with how we've been treating her from a masculine perspective, right? From everything from war to bombing to fracking to oil drilling to, and it's through, when I say feminize, right? If we don't start bringing in this true caring and compassion and empathy and love, right, into the world, in every aspect of the world, not just in our personal lives, but in our work environments, in our political environments. I mean, that's ultimately what's going to save the world.
Can I, so yes, to bring it back to men and what they're like, how they can be more feminine in their workplace. I mean, for me, you mentioned kind of adjectives like loyal, flexible, intuitive. I feel like the best businessmen and maybe the most successful men that I admire are exhibiting those qualities, and they have both. And so I wondered if you could talk a little about, you know, how men can move into that space more, or what, you know, what kind of trends you see with them as well.
I think it's starting, you know. I mean, if men are still predominantly the primary decision makers, they're the ones that we need to educate the most to start making the shift. I mean, we can't keep having these women's conferences in silos, right? We've got to start including the men in these conversations. And that's where the real, because they're still the primary decision makers. So they're the ones that have to reach that shift. But somebody just told me a story yesterday. He's a major leadership consultant for big, big organizations. And he goes in and he helps develop leadership teams and change cultures and so forth. And he was telling me about this company that he worked with, and at their annual meeting, the CEO, and it was the first time they implemented a 360 degree where every employee, so these were 200 managers and up from the company. And it was the first time they did a 360 degree where, you know, they get feedback from their manager, from their peers, from their customers, from so forth. And the guy got up there, and this is almost unheard of in a male dominated world, right? The guy got up there and said, I want you to read your 360 reviews, and I want you to share them with other people. He goes, and I want you to take a look at the feedback that you get. And I can't ask you to do that unless I'm willing to be vulnerable enough to do that myself. He stood on stage in front of his company, and he read his 360 review out loud, good, bad, ugly, and really ugly. And he was vulnerable enough to share what other people said about him in front of his audience, right? Like, that's a leader.
That is a leader.
Wow. Wow, that's a great story.
That's a great example.
On that note.
I'm not even thinking.
Do you have any other tidbits you'd like to share, Lisa, before we sign off?
Because we could go on all day. So
exactly. Did we leave any kind of core messages out that you'd
like to shout out?
I don't know. One of my biggest mottos is that when you come into your own power and your own truth and your own gift, right? Because I think we each come into the world with a very unique gift. And it doesn't have to be something big and grandiose, but it's something that's as unique to you as your thumbprint. When you come into that calling, that purpose, what lights you up, you automatically are, not only are you just happier, you automatically contribute to the healing of the world in some way. And that's what everybody's job is ultimately, is that when we come into our own power and our own unique skills and we light ourselves up, we contribute to the world. And that's what we're all meant to do.
Amen.
Yeah, beautiful. Actually, can I just add a tidbit? When we were talking about relationships and men and women and kind of that balance, I thought about the idea of gifts to each other. And it's so less about being submissive or who's in power in these moments, but rather like celebrating each other and showing support through gifts, like almost metaphorically gifts, but like
giving.
Thoughtfulness.
Right.
Yes, coming from thoughtfulness and giving and mutually doing that, I think creates a beautiful balance.
That's true.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've been talking with Lisa Marie Jenkins. She's the author of Wake Up, Beauty, It's Not About the Prince. And she also, you consult, you speak. So if you want to bring her to you or go to her, you can go to lisamariejenkins.com to check out her work. She's also on Twitter at lisajenkins920. And you can find us at TA Talk Sex on Twitter as well as Instagram. Check out our blog. Right now it's still PB with TA.
Oh yeah. Confusing.
About welcome to our new name change and the awkward shift in between.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Oh, that Lisa, was being vulnerable, putting yourself out there.
There you go. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your wisdom. This was fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you. This was so fun and so awesome. I enjoyed it very much.
Yay.
Keep doing your great work.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to TNA Talk Sex, where we push your boundaries. I'm T.
And I'm A.